Sliwa. Boom! The search for common ground begins today.
Founder of the Guardian Angels.
I got distracted. I thought Curtis Sliwa
from
the Guardian Angels was over there.
Curtis Sliwa?
There's a guy in a red hat.
Host of The Drive at 5, Curtis Sliwa.
We the people.
He's the New York State Reform Party chairman.
New York radio talk show host.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa is here.
He's really a New York City hero.
Yes.
He's an American hero.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
As we are high atop Madison Square Garden, the great facilities provided to us in order to broadcast to all of you on the 50,000 powerful watts of sound by NJDiet.com. The Mac Daddy theme is played, and that means Dominic Carter is in the house.
Good afternoon. Welcome home.
Yep.
How was Denver?
Denver was magnificent. The Mile High City was great. And
you,
it wasn't.
Wait, you were in the Mile High Club?
Not totally. I did travel with my girlfriend, Nancy Regula.
Oh, so you were in the Mile High
and
Club.
I did have the urge to merge.
Mm.
But I decided I wasn't going to do it at what? A few thousand feet above.
10,000 feet?
Yeah, well, 10,000. 6,000. You know, the Rocky Mountains, that makes it a lot closer. I decided I wasn't going to do it in the Bacchus, the bathroom that was on the American Airlines flight.
Mm.
So, no, I did not join the Mile High Club, although you can really get high in the streets of Denver because they have those marijuana dispensaries all over the place on the main strip, Colfax.
That's right. I haven't been to Denver in a couple of years, and you're telling me there are lots of these locations all over Denver?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're like 7-Eleven. They don't
Are
look
you
any
serious?
Different. Oh, yeah.
And do you need a prescription or no? You just walk in because of the state law in Colorado.
It's recreational use.
Seriously?
So you can walk in, and if you want to come outside and puff pass, you can do that too.
Seriously?
Oh, yeah. And it's not like you see a lot of potheads around, you know, as some of the articles written about it have suggested.
Is the smell in the air?
Yeah, the smell was in the air. Particularly on Saturday night, I was patrolling with the Guardian Angels chapter there on Colfax, and you could definitely smell the scent of marijuana in the air. But I didn't detect a major difference from now that it's legal in the streets of Denver for recreational use to when it was illegal. And you had dope fiends all over the place, popping pills, trafficking in pills in the streets, swapping it, you know, for heroin, swapping it for other pills.
So you're telling us it's not a bad idea to legalize marijuana?
Well, in fact, in the election tomorrow in New Jersey, Murphy, the Democrat who's way ahead of Guadagno, the lieutenant governor, who unfortunately has for her on her back, Shamu El Jefe, Chris Christie, and the lousy job that he did as governor of New Jersey.
That's not nice. Not your assessment of the job he did, but the whale sounds, and
well,
that's not nice.
Well, he's swimming out. You know, he's swimming out to Seaside Heights, out to the Atlantic Ocean, because soon he will be no more. But he was adamantly opposed to the legalization of marijuana. She is. But Murphy actually wants to legalize it. And wants it for recreational use. He thinks he could raise about $300 million for the Treasury.
That's the key point for any politician. That's what they all point out, the increase in the budget dollars. And I believe in Colorado, they've made a lot of money for the state budget, correct?
Yeah. And the only thing that I would say to everyone out there who wants to argue that marijuana is a gateway drug, like the guy who follows us, Michael Savage, who would have you believe it's the worst drug that has ever been created in mankind.
I wouldn't say it's the worst, but I agree that it's a gateway drug.
All right,
don't look at me like
you
that.
You can't quantify it as being like fentanyl or heroin.
I never did.
Or even what I take for my colitis and ileitis in order to suppress the pain, the hillbilly heroin oxycodone. You cannot even compare that. And by the way, if you notice now, you have a certain reversible antidote that is available in drugstores all across America for those that OD when they take fentanyl and when they take heroin or if they have an OD from a prescription like oxycodone or Percocet or Vicodin.
But help me out here. if you're in the process of ODing, if you don't have the kit right there available to you, you could die.
Yes. That's why the EMTs have it now, the police responders, first responders. I've never known a pothead who needed to a reversal of any point, like in order to prevent them from dying from having over-smoked or overused pot, you know, whether it's in a brownie form, a gummy bear form, or whether it comes in an oil or whatever other form that it might be marketed in. I've never known that. And that's the problem that our federal government has, is that it quantifies marijuana as being as dangerous to you for your use as fentanyl, which will kill you, heroin, or oxycodone.
I know this is a big issue for you,
yes.
but let's table it. I want to hear about the Guardian Angels.
Oh, yeah. Right.
You're forgetting the point here of why you were in Denver.
That's right.
They released a documentary on your life, your involvement starting the Guardian Angels.
That's right. And in fact, the two gentlemen responsible for this, millennials and hipsters, who I still hate, I loathe, I despise. Just like our own Justin B. Love, our producer and phone screener, Invader from Alabama, and Brian Mongaluch with his bun, his slim jeans, and actually his, his Converse sneakers. Anyway, I hate millennials, I hate hipsters, but these two guys came up with a great idea. They said, we want to do a documentary on you and the Guardian Angels. We want to call it Vigilante. We want your voice to be the voice throughout the documentary. Well, that's like music to my ears.
But wait a minute. But when did you have time to record the voice tracks? You're always on the radio. You're always working. You're always doing politics. When did you have time for this?
Dominic Carter, you ought to know me by now. I'm One Track Sliwa. And that means when I'm talking about things that I'm passionate about, just put the camera and the microphone in my face and let me go. Just let me go. And you're not going to have to edit that much. And they really didn't. And there was a lot of extra material that they didn't use. They might end up being in a second documentary or a third documentary. But we showcased the raw footage about 2 years ago to a selected group of people. And I got to tell you, what they both did, both David Wexler and Brad Coleman, is absolutely amazing because it's 10 times better than what I originally saw 2 years ago. And they decided to preview it not before a New York City audience, because let's face it, people in New York, they have a pretty good idea of what the Guardian Angels were doing in the 70s and 80s. They previewed it in the heartland, in Denver. And even though we have an active chapter of the Guardian Angels there, they're not as knowledgeable about the Guardian Angels as people in New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, or Connecticut.
So when you started the Guardian Angels,
yes,
it was while the Bronx was burning,
yeah,
right?
Yes, 1979. Right.
Okay, so because I'm very curious about this, because I remember studying you while I was in graduate school up at Syracuse University.
Oh,
seriously.
You studied me?
Yes, we literally studied you, seriously.
Wow. What grade did you get? Did you write a term paper on me? Did you cheat? Did you use Cliff Notes?
Too much information.
Oh, okay.
But here's the question I have. What, off the top of your head, you haven't gone over this with me, what's your best experience ever you've had as the Guardian Angels head, and what's the worst experience? I know you've told the stories about being beaten up by police, and I believe you call it the wooden shampoos. Is that what you call it?
Yes.
Okay. So what's been your best experience ever? What's been your worst experience? And has there been any one experience that got you emotional? For example, at this screening in Denver, you're watching your life for the last 35 years up on the screen.
Yeah, and I'm talking trash at the screen as it's playing.
That's what you do.
Which a lot of the Denver residents were like a little upset. They said, yeah, that's you. You're the feature of this.
Can I watch it, please?
Yeah, can I watch it? Because I'm talking.
So tell me the best part and the worst part for you.
Is when we were called into Times Square in Restaurant Row in the middle of the crack cocaine epidemic, where crack monsters were beaming themselves up to Scotty in the glass pipe smoking those rocks.
Literally.
And it had paralyzed Times Square, the gateway to the world, and Restaurant Row. And in defiance against your friend, Mayor Kochet, you had many a moonlit dinner with at his bachelor pad.
I won't deny it. Mayor Kochet was my man.
You guys were tight in more ways than one. But let me just say, Koch was opposed to us being brought in at Times Square and Restaurant Row. The owners of the Schubert Theater chain defied him, as did the restaurateurs, and we cleaned up Times Square. We did it. Remember, this is pre-Rudy Giuliani, and Koch didn't know where to turn. And that just turned his police commission at that time, the one that he said was the greatest police commissioner of all time. You remember him. Half in the bag all the time on our case. And he was locking us up over and over again. So I would say that was our best accomplishment because it was against overwhelming odds.
The worst.
Right. Benjamin Ward was like on our jockstrap as the police commissioner. And the worst, I would say the worst is, the worst was probably just getting thrown into jail so many times. Detroit House of Correction, Detroit, 10 days amongst the brothers. And they were like welcoming me because they were watching on TV as I was being brought in chains and shackles to the Detroit House of Correction, which is actually on the outskirts. They just knocked it down this past year.
Wait a minute. They put you in shackles?
Yeah, chains and shackles. Because Coleman Young, the mayor there, did not want the Guardian Angels.
The African-American mayor.
Right. He was called King Coleman there. I attended a rape crisis conference. ACORN invited me, the community organization, to speak on their behalf. But Coleman Young was so vain, he didn't wear his glasses. And so when it was ACORN's time to speak, they said, we defer our microphone to Curtis Sliwa. And he was busy talking, so he wasn't paying attention. And then he heard my voice, you know, my Brooklyn Bronx vernacular. And he said, you from New York, arrest him. And they hogtied me in front of 4,000 people at the Book Cadillac Hotel in Detroit, dragged me out, threw me in the paddy wagon, tossed me in jail, fined me $10,000. I said I wouldn't pay a nickel, dime, or penny.
Arrested you for what?
For defying the mayor. Defying the mayor, yeah. Well, that's the way he ran his fiefdom.
And the most emotional moment for you because the fact of the matter is, we take it for granted because you're right, you're from here. Yeah. But the Guardian Angels is a worldwide organization that much acclaim. Yeah. You have your share of critics.
Yeah.
What's been, you don't like to do the emotional thing,
no,
Mr.
Sliwa.
There's
no doubt. But what's been the most emotional was? That was when a Newark police officer shot and killed our Guardian Angel leader in Newark while he was on patrol of the Dayton Housing Projects near Van Vechten Street, near Seth Boyden Projects, shot and killed him, murdered him, and got away with it. That was horrible. That was traumatic. The mayor at the time, Gibson, wouldn't even give us the time of day, and the cops just continued to harass us there. And Frankie Melvin, who grew up in the Dayton Housing Projects, ended up getting buried right in that cemetery next door in Hillside. And that's one, every time I think about it, I get emotional. Because there was absolutely no reason in the world for that police officer to pull out a gun and shoot Frankie Melvin on the spot, wearing his red berets, red jacket.
So where did the red come from? The red in terms of the beret and the jacket, what's that about?
Well, that was so you could be seen. You know, in the subways in the late 70s, it was very dark and dank. Mm. It wasn't lit up like it is now. And I always wanted the Guardian Angels, put your freaking beret on, not like the cops who are like Travolta, always taking their caps off. Because that's how you recognize them as cops, from the caps they're wearing, not the uniform. You can't spot them at a distance. And so I've always told the Guardian, keep the damn red beret on your head. That's what it's there for, because this way people can see if they have a problem, they know who to run to, not who to run away from. And it served us well.
Did you get emotional this weekend as you were watching your life story on the big screen?
No. Like I said, I was talking trash at the screen.
You were talking trash about yourself and your own organization.
You know, like I used to go to the Dukes, 42nd Street, and you'd get three kung fu flicks for $5.
Or three porn movies for $5.
Yeah, and then you go to the porno, right? Went to kung fu flicks. And the brothers would pack the house. And, you know, Run Shaw would do these movies in which the Chinese guys were jumping in the air like 5,000 feet, you know, throwing all kinds of spinning hook kicks, reverse punches.
And you like that, right?
Up
your alley.
The brothers would be talking trash. Yeah, you do that to me, and I'll pull my gun out. And they'd pull their toolie out and shoot right at the screen. And everyone would go running out of the theater and flooding into the Deuce. Now, you remember that, don't you?
Yeah, but so what do you make of the new 42nd Street?
No, it's too Disney-fied for me. I don't want it to go back to the sleaze and slime of the Deuce as we knew it in the 70s and 80s. But it's way too Disney-fied, and there are too many tourists. I mean, you got these porkers coming in from Nebraska and Iowa. You got the red Chinese spitting in the street, you know.
But isn't it good for the economy? Isn't it about the money?
Oh, yeah, it is good for the economy, but you ask me, do I like it? And I'm being straight up. No, I don't like it. I want my freaking city back. I want these damn hipsters and millennials shipped out of here.
You
want to
argue with the black guys. You want to argue with the black guys.
Oh, I argue with black guys all the time.
What do you call the ones that they're I don't want to insult them. They're reading their religious books.
Oh, you mean the black followers of Screwy Louis Farrakhan.
No, not the Farrakhan people. The other guys that stand out.
Lost Tribes of Israel.
Right, and they stand in the middle of the street. I still want somebody to explain to me how you have a First Amendment right to stand in the middle of the block the entire block, saying outrageous things.
And talking the fact that, hey, Sliwa, you white devil. 1-800-848-WABC.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
Join the club, Dominic Carter. Because as you can see from this Prince classic, how many name changes did he go through? The Purple One, Love Symbol, artist formerly known as Prince, the artist, right?
That's right. I forgot all about that.
And now your favorite, Puff Daddy, P. Diddy, you know, from Mount St. Michael's. That's become the Puff Daddy Institute, the high school up in the Bronx that graduated him. He's gone through P. Diddy, Puff Daddy, Diddy, Love, and now Brother Love. So I am suggesting that you, as a brother, in solidarity with Prince, who's in the hereafter, and unfortunately P. Diddy, who's still amongst us, that you too change your name to Mac Daddy, based on the theme song that we play for you when you come in and join me.
Wait a minute. One more time. You're telling...
Why not? That would be a great name for you. Mac Daddy.
Okay. So you know I work for Verizon Fios TV and RNN. Imagine the news anchors tossing to me.
Or the Chiron.
Or the Chiron. What's the name you want to give me again?
Mac Daddy.
So can you... I like that part.
That should be your new nickname.
So just imagine... one of these dignified news anchors from Connecticut or New Jersey or upstate New York, and our Mac Daddy is standing.
Oh, man, that would get you mucho eyeballs on RNN
Fios
One
Monday
through Friday from 6 to 7 when you do your news and commentary with the cryon underneath you.
When did you get back from Colorado?
Oh, I got back. I landed at JFK about 10:15.
Are you serious?
Yeah. And then
just got back?
Yeah, I took the A train all the way from Howard Beach right on down here to 34th Street.
And so you want me to change my name to Mac Daddy?
Yeah, in honor of your brothers in solidarity, Prince, who's in the hereafter, and P. Diddy, who should be. I mean, it's perfect for you.
Okay, but wait. If I change my name, then what are you going to change your name to?
Oh, The Rock. Because I will rock your world. I'll hit you so hard your mother will feel the vibrations.
The Rock?
Yeah, The Rock. But
like,
anyway.
Like the actor, The Rock?
No. Man, he's an actor. He's a thespian. Man, that's a fugazi. Let's go, if we can, to the phones. And it's Glenn, first up in the queue, calling from Tom's River. Welcome to Curtis and Dominic Carter here at WABC. Glenn?
Hello, Curtis and Dominic.
Hi, Glenn.
The Guardian Angels do such great work, and it's fine that they're doing a documentary to highlight that. But don't you find the title Vigilante a pejorative, that it denotes that you operate outside the law, and don't you think they should have maybe called it something other than vigilante?
No, because for many, many years, and even to this day, people think of us as vigilantes. When I travel the world, because we have Guardian Angels now in 13 countries, 130 cities, they'll say, oh, the vigilantes. And so what I decided to do is not fight that scarlet letter, because it was consistently just thrown in our direction, but to give a new spin on it, because vigilante is really not a bad term. Movies have created a bad image of vigilantes. But when you consider out west, when our country was being settled and it was lawless and there was no sheriff and there was no law enforcement, people had to become vigilantes to prevent their communities from being ravaged, the women being raped, them being robbed, the banks being robbed. And so they went out and started posse comitatus. And sometimes they made mistakes. You know, they give somebody a Colombian necktie who didn't deserve it. But if not for them, it would have been complete anarchy and lawlessness. So I believe you take a name, like the brothers have, the N-word. You know, they've decided to culturally...
Careful.
Well, they say they've culturally appropriated it back, right?
Be careful.
And that it's now a positive term.
You're going to get both of us fired.
But you know that's what the brothers say.
that's the spin on some that want to use a term that should never be used.
Okay.
You know what's funny about that term? And it's not funny. It's sad. Hey, you know.
N-bomb.
Addressing each other. But if you, as somebody white, says it one time, they're ready to knock you out.
Oh, yeah.
So do the math. Why would they want to knock you out and will knock you out for you saying it, but the fellow person of color is like, what's up, my dog?
Dominic, because my complexion when it comes to that is not my protection. And on that note, let's get our news headlines from Ken Duffy.
Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
77 WABC.
As we approach Election Day tomorrow, locally, hanging over the mayoral part of that hopeful turnout, because clearly it looks like turnout may be meager, maybe even worse than it was when Comrade de Blasio won the first time against Republican Joe Loda. And boy, that was a miserable turnout. But hanging over this mayoral election with the bombshell allegations made 2 weeks ago on the witness stand by Reichnitz, who, along with his partner Reichberg, had become the heckle and jekyll of political donors to political campaigns. And they wanted to build their cred in the political world. And they felt, gee, if we can get our hooks into the mayor, boy, this is going to be great. And the way they did that was by climbing the ladder, making donations to Bill de Blasio's pet projects and naturally to his reelection campaign, close to $200,000 in what Reichnitz on the witness stand says was clearly paid for play. And as you know, Dominic Carter, Reichnitz is the lead witness against Norman Seabrook, the former president of the Correctional Union Workers group. In which he was taking from Reichnitz $60,000, put it in a Ferragamo bag, walked away with it and said, hey, don't worry, we can do business together.
Well, that's the allegation. But what's going on? He's testifying against Seabrook. But this is clearly a situation, Curtis, where the entire thing stinks. It really does. In terms of de Blasio, in terms of the Westchester County executive, Rob Astorino. But let's focus on the point that you made and that Rolodex watch. But let's focus on what you just talked about, de Blasio, for a second. The mayor actually said, I want you to think about this. In the debate the other night that you've talked about, the mayor actually said, New Yorkers don't care about this. I'm not discussing this anymore. Think about that. So there is some good that's come out of this, and that is term limits. Because at least under term limits, it's impossible, almost impossible, to beat an incumbent. That's why de Blasio's cruising to reelection. So at least New Yorkers will only be stuck with him for two terms. It's despicable and it's disgusting. It's pay for play and it's the way that business goes in New York City.
But what I want to ask all many listeners, whether you happen to reside in New York or you don't, is this mayor, your mayor, Comrade Bill de Blasio.
My mayor.
Yeah, I didn't vote for him, and I'm not voting for him a second time. My candidate is Sal Albanese for mayor, but
de Blasio, as you're making your point,
yes.
Let me just go on record. Covering the last mayors for the last 30 years, he is by far the most arrogant of any mayor I have ever covered.
And a pretentious a-hole. There's no doubt about it.
And let the church say,
amen.
Amen.
Amen. Now, in his last debate against Nicole Malliotakis and Bo Dietl, he basically looked in the camera, that Channel 2 CBS camera, and said, people don't care about pay for play.
Right, right.
They don't care about corruption
right.
at
Think
City Hall.
Think about that.
As long as crime is down, as long as kids are being educated in the schools, as long as there are jobs, as long as the economy is good, New Yorkers, they don't care about corruption at City Hall or pay for play. They never asked me about that.
And Curtis, remember, you have a former deputy commissioner out of the Bronx, someone with impeccable credentials, Ricardo Morales.
Yes.
He's suing the city because de Blasio's team literally took the negotiations over of a restaurant contract away from his agency because the donor was not getting what they wanted and moved the negotiations to City Hall. Think about that for a second.
Well, the mayor is telling us, yes, that did happen, but none of the voters seem to care. They don't seem to care that I made arrangements with my donors. They don't seem to care that they have the priority because if you scratch my belly, I scratch yours. Is that true, ladies and gentlemen? Have we become so indifferent, so apathetic, so non-involved that we just accept the fact that this mayor is a corrupt one and that he'll continue to be corrupt if he earns another 4 years in office from the voters tomorrow? 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222.
Or what about the fact that the mayor lied to the public about how many times he's contacted with this donor who's now cooperating for the feds testifying in the Seabrook trial? De Blasio described him as someone that he occasionally spoke with. As you and I have talked about, he went on the stand and said he talked to the mayor at least once a week, if not more.
Had his personal cell phone.
Had his personal cell phone number.
Had his personal email. And the mayor seems to have developed what Jeff Sessions has whenever you mention Russians to him, the attorney general, dementia or amnesia. No. There's no way this guy was talking to me every week. No, he was never that close. He gave you $200,000.
I don't remember.
Exactly.
I don't know.
Now, that will probably have little impact on tomorrow's mayoral election.
And that's what's the sad part of this about this is. The man has come out and told you, oh, you don't care about the corruption, and he'll still probably cruise to reelection.
But the race that it may have an impact in is the reelection bid of Rob Astorino, who is the Westchester County Executive. He's running on the Republican-Conservative line against George Latimer, who's running on the Democratic line and the Reform Party line, of which I'm the New York State chairman.
Latimer has your line as well?
Yes, he does.
Okay, quick funny story. So Saturday, I'm thinking about you in Denver, right? I won't lie, I missed you a little bit. Teeny bit. Yeah, a little bit.
You had separation anxiety for me?
I wouldn't go that far. I missed you a little bit. But anyway, so I'm in Chappaqua having breakfast with my wife, right? And I'm at some restaurant. It's my only day off, and I want to stay as far away from politics as possible.
Yes.
I look up from sipping my coffee, and there's Christine Quinn right in front of me.
With her glow-in-the-dark orange Revlon hair.
I'm not going there.
The former Speaker of the City Council.
Yeah, and George Latimer. She's there campaigning with him.
Oh, my God.
And another candidate.
And Hillary was campaigning for George Latimer. You know, because she lives nearby in Chappaqua, the whitest suburb in America. Where the lawn jockeys are white.
Is that why I didn't see any brothers?
Yes.
Is that why I was the only brother?
Yeah.
But the cops didn't stop me.
No, and they wouldn't because they know you, Dominic. You're a good brother. You see,
I'm a good one?
Yeah, well, good. Meaning?
You said good.
I'm telling what the cops think, not what Curtis Sliwa thinks. But anyway, so here is Rob Astorino.
Right.
Accepted from Reichnitz and Reichberg, the Heckle and Jekyll political contributors, $25,000 so that they could be made clergy members of the Westchester County Police, as if there aren't enough Jews in Scarsdale to fill up four tourist buses who could be the rabbis to the Westchester County Police Department.
Be careful.
These are not rabbis. They got the placards, which gives them parking privileges, and now they can style and profile like big mockers. And to this day, Rob Astorino will not answer the question, why did you take $25,000 from these two guys? Why did you make them clergy when they're not qualified?
But your guy, Latimer, won't answer about his personal life and the judge. Who he was in Europe with.
He's accused of having the Gumata on his trip to London. See, I can't speak on that because, let's face it, I've been guilty in the same fashion. So that's a wash for me. But apparently he hasn't paid taxes on a house that his wife still owns.
Oh.
I think outside of Scarsdale, about $46,000. But the point being is, it's a neck and neck race.
So wait a minute. But wait, I'm stuck on what you just said. You're telling me there are no brothers in Chappaqua?
No brothers whatsoever. None. The lawn jockeys are even white. It's the whitest suburb in America, and that's where the
Is that why the governor lives there and the Clintons?
No. The governor lives, I believe, he's not there.
All right. But the same county.
Cuomo, right.
Yes.
But remember, Donna Brazile will not be invited to move to Chappaqua anytime soon.
Right, but I have to give you credit right now. You know why? For the first time, I've done this show with you.
Yes.
And we've mentioned Cuomo. you have not described him the way that you normally do. So you must be exhausted from your plane ride this morning.
Oh, no, Andrew Evil Eyes Cuomo, King Cuomo the second, the son of Mario Facciaputa, Cuomo, King Cuomo the first. Anyway, let's go to, who is this, Siraj Wahaj? Is this Siraj Wahaj here in Brooklyn? No, he's not there. I kind of knew that was going to be a fake, phony, fraudulent Fugazi call. Anyway, our number is 1-800-848-WABC.
Curtis Sliwa.
Boom! The search for common ground begins today.
Founder of the Guardian Angels.
I got distracted. I thought Curtis Sliwa
from
the Guardian Angels was over there.
Curtis Sliwa.
There's a guy in a red hat.
Host of The Drive at 5, Curtis Sliwa.
We the people.
He's the New York State Reform Party chairman.
New York radio talk show host. Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa is here.
He's really a New York City hero.
Yeah.
He's an American hero.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
Prepare yourself, you know it's a must. Gonna have a friend in Jesus. So you know that when you die, he's gonna recommend you to the spirit in the sky.
7 minutes after the hour of one. As we are high atop Madison Square Garden, the great facilities provided to us in order to do this broadcast to all of you by NJDiet.com. And Dominic Carter is in the house. Yesterday, a typical Sunday for so many Americans, heading off to their houses of worship as they were in Sutherland Springs, Texas, a local Baptist church. A person who was also going wasn't there to worship. He went there to kill. Strapped on with his body armor, an assault weapon in his hands, and a vehicle loaded with guns outside. He walks in and he shoots and kills almost two dozen, an entire family of eight. He then goes outside, shoots two more. He then is confronted by a citizen who engages in a chase with him. As he himself, the citizen, the Good Samaritan, is wielding a rifle trying to stop him. And eventually, after a high-speed crash, he ends up taking his own life. But let's go back to the original announcement by the Texas Department of Public Safety on what transpired.
At approximately 11:20 this morning, a suspect was seen at a Valero gas station in Sutherland Springs, Texas. He was dressed in all black. That suspect crossed the street to the church. Exited his vehicle and began firing at the church. That suspect then moved to the right side of the church and continued to fire. That suspect entered the church and continued to fire. As he exited the church, a local resident grabbed his rifle and engaged that suspect. The suspect dropped his rifle, which was a Ruger AR assault-type rifle, and fled from the church. Our local citizen pursued the suspect.
And the local citizen had this to say about his pursuit of the killer.
I pulled up on the intersection and I saw the shooter coming from the cars, actually right outside the church that were parked. His vehicle was parked, door open, engine running, and him and the neighbor across the street were both coming out about the same time, exchanging fire. And as he came up, I never got a look at him. I never really saw him. I saw the gunfire. The shooter got in his truck. The gentleman in the with the rifle came to my truck as the shooter took off, and he briefed me quickly on what had just happened and said that we had to get him, and so that's what I did. He just hurt so many people, and he just affected so many people's lives. Why wouldn't you want to take him down?
And then the president weighed in on this on his trip to Asia.
I think that mental health is your problem here. This was based on preliminary reports, very deranged individual, a lot of problems over a long period of time. We have a lot of mental health problems in our country, as do other countries. But this isn't a guns situation. I mean, we could go into it, but it's a little bit soon to go into it. But fortunately, somebody else had a gun that was shooting in the opposite direction. Otherwise, it would have been as bad as it was. It would have been much worse.
I didn't know that our president is a shrink. He's already decided it's a mental health problem, not another gun issue of somebody who has weapons of war.
Well, Curtis,
in his possession.
But wait a minute. I agree with the president on this one. All right, it's not whether or not he's a mental health expert, we have got to get to the point in this country. What do our politicians do? What do they run for re-election on? They run for re-election on the fact of cutting the budget, reducing taxes. Those are the two sexy issues.
For Republicans.
Yes.
And they never cut the budget.
But to a degree, also for Democrats, right, in terms of lowering taxes for homeowners, and cutting the budget, but, you know, running on less. That was the whole premise behind the Trump campaign. At some point, we as a country are going to have to get serious about the issue of mental health, mental illness. We have got to stop, meaning America, cutting the beds, the dollars. Almost any budget, and especially the feds, the one area where they seem to cut, or certainly there's no budget increase, happens to be mental illness. And these types of situations, this man took out the pastor's 14-year-old daughter. Think about that for a second. He also took out a generation of three in the family. I guess mother, father, father, child, and grandfather, or whatever it may be, mother, it may be the female version of it. But my point is this, Curtis, we've got to, what about screening for mental health? What about crisis counselors?
Yeah, but Dominic, we're just now learning about this guy, his background.
You're proving my point even more.
How does a president from all the way in Asia indicate this is a mental health problem, when all we know is a guy with body armor walks in with a weapon of war and unloads on everybody that he can shoot, and then comes to the conclusion it's a mental health issue?
Okay, why
don't we just find out more about the guy first,
okay,
before we come to that conclusion?
Okay, let's go back. The Vegas shooting.
Yes.
I told you guys all along that this guy had problems from gambling. The media report said just the opposite. Wait, let me just finish.
You don't realize how many people have problems with gambling in Vegas,
right,
and they don't go shooting up people?
You are correct. But the media report said that he was a very successful gambler. I don't know someone that's been gambling for many years is very successful. The odds are against you. So now it's coming out, the Vegas shooter, that he had lost in recent years and may have had financial issues. What I'm trying to say to you, Curtis, is I understand your point about waiting for the president, but it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure this out.
Well,
this man has serious mental illness.
Yeah, but wait a second. We have gun laws that should be enforced, and the Texas Attorney General weighed in on that.
Current law, as it exists right now, should have prevented him from being able to get a gun. I can tell you that before he made this purchase, he tried to get a gun permit in the state of Texas and was denied that permit. And so under the current system of federal law, he should have prevented from being able to make this purchase. How that got through the cracks, I don't have that information, but it's important to understand these are the types of facts and issues that investigators continue to look into, and we will be able to have clear answers to those questions in the coming days.
Well, that's good, but the fact is he had a car full of guns when he crashed, not just the gun that he used to kill people with, the AR-15, but that he had other guns, sizable number of guns and ammunition. And in fact, the governor of Texas, Greg Abbott, weighed in on that.
It's not clear to me that he wasn't already prevented from having a gun, given his history in the military. So, you know, what ultimately may have saved some lives is two people that were outside the church that actually had guns that may have slowed this guy down and actually pursued him. So I would rather arm law-abiding citizens and make sure that they can prevent this from happening, as opposed to trying to pass laws that would prevent law-abiding citizens from having guns.
Well, apparently, the Daily News has just published an account that the reason that he was able to legally purchase the gun is that when he got washed out of the Air Force, that he was listed as the reason being bad conduct, not a dishonorable discharge, which allowed him then to legally purchase those weapons. So you see, the Attorney General didn't know that. The governor didn't know that yesterday. Let's just hold off before we all start jumping to conclusions like the president. It's a mental health issue, not a gun issue. and just allow the details to come out, and then we come to our own conclusions based on the facts.
But, Curtis, every one of these situations, to some degree, shape, or form, involves mental illness. Nobody in their right mind with a beef with their mother-in-law who's not present at church that day. And explain this to me. Maybe you can explain. What is this obsession with these nuts with shooting up churches?
Well, this guy in particular of late has been an atheist, all of his postings. And yet originally he taught Bible studies at a different Baptist church, Kingsville First Baptist Church. That's where he met his wife, who was a teacher at that Baptist church. So apparently for a while he was a holy roller, then fell out of the faith, became a self-described atheist. But I'd like to know what other transactions he had, what other involvements with people that would suggest that the guy had all the furniture upstairs and rearranged in the wrong rooms, because we're seeing this like every other week. Major shooting. This is the worst shooting ever in the history of Texas. We just saw that in Vegas. The worst shooting ever in the United States.
You're proving my point.
And why? Because they're using weapons of war.
Right. They are using weapons of war. But while this battle continues over the right to bear arms, what we know definitively at this point is we need more budget dollars, federal dollars, on the mental health front. We need more crisis counselors. And perhaps we could avoid this, or we could flag these individuals before they do something like
this.
Here's
the problem. Are you going to admit that you're going for mental health counseling? Are you going to admit that you're going to a shrink or a psychoanalyst? The reality is you're probably not. Because you don't
right.
want that stigma.
I agree with you. But what's the alternative? To continue to just sit here? You can't put a federal marshal on every church. And clearly, he was smart enough to say, let me go to a church 40 miles, I believe, outside of San Antonio to do this. It's something has to give here, Curtis. We cut taxes. We cut the budget. And we're also cutting mental health dollars.
And yet, even with all these homicides, the most of which are suicides by gun, two-thirds of the people who are dead as a result of gun violence are suicides. The people who are dying most now in the country are those who are dying as a result of drug overdoses. It has surpassed the gun deaths. So when you say therapy and beds and rehab, we're not even doing that for dope fiends. The
you
president even hasn't come up with the money for that yet.
You know why? Because mental health and mental health beds, that's not sexy. That doesn't get someone reelected.
Well, let's go to Antonio first up in the queue, calling from Texas. Welcome to Curtis and Dominic Carter here at WABC. Antonio?
Hello, Curtis, Dominic. I just wanted to bring up a point. First of all, I just want to say, you know, that little town of Sulphur Springs, I've never been there, but it's like any little small Texas town, you know, good people. So it's really tragic. But no one's really mentioned anything about the gun shows. You know, they have them here all the time. So I wouldn't be surprised that he probably purchased the weapons at a gun show semi-legally. So also, everyone here has a gun here in the state. So it wouldn't surprise me that he might have bought it off a friend. Although I think they say he did buy it himself. So my only suspicion is a gun show.
So wait, Antonio, you're calling us from Texas right now?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, what part of Texas?
I'd rather not say, but in the hill country.
Okay, does this surprise you?
Does it surprise me? Well, not really, but at the same time, I mean, people don't pop each other frequently out here like that, so.
Well, I'll give you an example, Antonio. I just came back from Denver before I arrived over the weekend for the premiere of the Guardian Angel documentary Vigilante. They had a guy walk into a Walmart, shoot and kill three people. Six other shoppers at Walmart pulled out their handguns, were running around looking for the shooter. Law enforcement ended up running after the six other people who had pulled their handguns out because they saw them on the video cameras and assumed that they may have been the gunman. So it's not always an answer. Should you be armed? Should you fight back? As we saw in this case where the guy with the rifle jumped into the truck with other citizens and they chased him down until his demise. That's great. But it doesn't always work out that way.
Of course it doesn't always work out that way, because this is not a Hollywood movie. It's not a clean version of, oh, this guy in the theater also has a gun, and while this person is firing away with a semi-automatic weapon, this person with a gun can just jump up and shoot back and hit that person.
Let's quickly go to Richard in Staten Island. Welcome to Curtis and Dominic Carter here at WABC. Rich.
Good afternoon, guys. I'm sorry. The common denominator in all this is guns. I'm sorry. It's time. It's time to repeal the Second Amendment. They had less than 1,000 murders
Richard, the reason why I'm focusing on the mental health component. Richard, you know damn well that they will never repeal the Second Amendment. You know that.
Let's stop advertising. Let's stop speaking about these massacres. Let's just accept it on a monthly basis, which is almost where we are right now, and let's just move on. Because if you're not going to take away the common denominator, nothing's going to happen. Do you want to have a mental health discussion, Dominic? And who's going to be the arbiter? Who's going to be the media? Donald Trump?
Oh, boy. Boy, that's the last guy in the world who should be the arbiter about mental health situations. Anyway, our number is 1-800-848-WABC.
Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
77 WABC.
To the phones we go. Dominic Carter in the house. It's Al in Long Island. Welcome to WABC, Al.
Hey, how you doing, guys? Hey, listen, I wanted to just chime in a little bit on this topic. It's a good topic. One of the things you got to look at is the fact that the president is just cutting millions, if not billions, away from what was covering people with mental health conditions, which is pre-existing conditions. Now, we had the best opportunity to deal with people with those pre-existing conditions because it was funded. It's just a matter of getting people diagnosed and in the right programs and the right help. But if you cut all that money, guess what's going to happen? It's going to get worse.
That's right, Al. And then we're surprised when something bad happens.
It's got to get worse. And here's another thing to think about. The last 20 years, 20 plus years, the top 8 felonies, which have been an average around 2 to 2.1 million occurrences per year, those numbers are not going to change. We are a society of high crime, and guns are a major part of that.
Well, the mental health issue is far more complicated than getting rehab or getting counseling for a drug problem. People accept that. They say, oh, you're strung out, you're a junkie, you're an addict, okay, you're going to rehab. Courts will even assign you to a rehab stint as opposed to jail time. But mental health, there's still this huge stigma. And all the wealthy and the rich on the island of Manhattan, where per capita per person there are more shrinks, more psychoanalysts than anywhere in the world, they brag about their therapists. You're not going to see that in other parts of our city or throughout our tri-state area. So, it's going to be very much on the hush-hush-mush-mush.
So what's the alternative? So, for example, last night I was in Bayonne, your neck of the hood. You're all over New Jersey. Speaking on behalf of the NAACP, and the dinner started with a reverend and the mayor. I didn't even know what had happened in Texas yesterday. And they started the dinner bringing all Americans together by pointing out what happened in Texas. This is becoming the norm. We ignore the mental health issue every time this happens because it is complicated, as you said. No one wants to deal with it. But it's time to get real. The Second Amendment is not going anywhere. The NRA owns our politicians. So we've got to try and fight the NRA, but at the same time, we've got to deal with the mental health component.
I look at it this way. You're a pyromaniac, right? You like fires. You set fires. You get a vicarious thrill out of it. Well, you make sure you don't have the implements to start fires. When you allow for assault weapons to be sold openly in a country that has people who are half off their rocker, who are crackpots, who are ready to go over the edge at a moment's notice, then it's like the pyromaniac who has the match in his hand.
I agree with you. But hasn't that train already left the station?
No, it hasn't.
With Newtown, it didn't already leave the station with all those innocent kids that died?
You'll go to Ryan, Speaker of the House. You'll go to the President. You'll go to Mitch McConnell, the leader of the Republican majority in the Senate. And they'll say, oh, we're too busy grieving now. No time to discuss gun control. Well, when is the time to discuss gun
control?
Curtis,
you know, come on, man. You're a man of the street. You know The NRA owns half of Washington.
They own half of Washington. But guess what? They weren't like this years ago before Wayne LaPierre. Before he came in, this dictator, this despot, this guy who will not compromise on anything. The NRA used to compromise quite a deal. No longer. That's why Wayne has got to go and his ilk have got to go. But right now, let's get some news headlines and updates from Ken Duffy.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
So shut up, shut up, shut up. Come on and hear it. Get up, get up.
From the whitest suburb in America, not far from Pomona in Rockland County, where Dominic Carter lives, is Chappaqua, where there is the Love Shack that, if you remember, Hillary Rodham Clinton loaded up the hillbillies and racketeers in the back of the pickup truck from the governor's mansion in Little Rock, rode to Chappaqua, housed the New York State Democratic Party from then Mario Faccia Brutta Cuomo and his son Andrew Evilize Cuomo, and basically took over New York State Democratic politics with her husband, lock, stock, and barrel. She became a nightmare for us in New York State, as she has become a nightmare for the DNC, especially with the revelations, Dominic Carter, of the former head of the DNC, Donna Brazile, who said that, yeah, the process was rigged against the Altacaca, Bernie Sanders, in the Democratic primary.
I've gotten emails from Democrats.
I bet.
Passionate Democrats who say they feel betrayed by all this. Any regrets?
Do I regret taking on a job the second time in my life as chair of the party, cleaning up everybody's mess, taking all of the incoming, being unable to spend funds that I raised? Do I regret being on the road 100% of the time, being hacked by the Russians, being harassed, getting death threats? Do I regret any of that? George, this was worse than Hurricane Katrina in terms of the emotional toll.
Whoa, 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 whoa. Sarah Bernhardt here. Katrina, there was 1,000 people that died. Over 1,000 people.
Yeah, I don't mean to laugh at that because it's not funny. I'm laughing at the reaction of the former temporary head, Donna Brazile, of the DNC.
Well, remember, she had run the Gore campaign that
got
tied into
knots,
right, with Bush 43.
That's what this is all about. It's payback time.
Oh. So then she talked about in her book when Hillary did that collapse on her way into the SUV after the commemoration down at the 9-1-1 location, the World Trade Center, that she was seriously thinking of swapping out Hillary as the presidential candidate at the top of the ticket for Joe Biden to be president and for Cory Booker to be his vice presidential running mate.
You didn't have the power on your own to replace Hillary on the ticket.
No, but as you well know, the charter of the DNC, as well as the convention rules, say that the chairperson shall, in consultation with the leadership in Congress and others. And so I had to put it on the table, George, because I was under tremendous pressure after Secretary Clinton fainted to have a quote-unquote plan B.
Well, remember, it turns out the team Clinton said she had pneumonia, although they had never hinted at that before the collapse.
Listen, I like Donna Brazile, but Donna is a bit delusional here. If she thinks that in this campaign she was going to step in at the 11th hour, having run Al Gore's campaign, and replace Hillary Clinton with Joe Biden, it just was not going to happen.
Well, anyway, all the Democrats are telling her to shut up, shut up. And she says to all of them, go to hell.
This is a lesson of 2016. If I released it next year, they would say, Donna, you're impacting on 2018. If I release it the fall, Donna, you're impacting. George, for those who are telling me to shut up, they told Hillary that a couple of months ago. You know what I tell them? Go to hell. I'm going to tell my story. And I say go to hell because why am I supposed to be the only person that is unable to tell my story?
Ah, so should the other Democrats go to hell, ladies and gentlemen, for telling Donna Brazile to basically stifle it? It's almost as if you remember from all the days in the All in the Family. Remember when the patriarch would turn to his wife and say, hey, stifle it, stifle it. That's pretty much what the Clintonistas are saying to Donna Brazile now. And then she had words also for the former president, Barack Obama. She says he left the DNC in a bankrupted state.
From the sound of it, it sounds like you had a pretty dysfunctional relationship with the high command in Hillary's campaign. You even talk about telling them at some point, I'm not Patsy the slave.
Oh, George, let me tell you something. I could not control the purse string of the Democratic Party, and I had to figure out what was going on within the party, that the chair of the party, and remember, I wasn't just a chair, I'm also a vice chair. I was an officer for 8 years. 8 years under President Obama. I knew what was going on within the party. I become chair and I'm trying to write a check for something. I raised the money and they're like, you gotta get signed off from Brooklyn. I said, Brooklyn? This wasn't a standard joint fundraising agreement. They had a separate memorandum of understanding, and I needed to break that. But in order to break it, I would cause a great commotion.
Now, interesting, Dominic Carter. Elizabeth Warren, senator of Massachusetts, has said, yes, Donna Brazile is telling the truth. But the guy affected, who was victimized by this, the Altacaca, Bernie Sanders, he has basically said nothing. He has taken the code of Omerta on this, or in the old ways that the Altacaca would speak, you know, when all was said and done, and let's say you had put everything on the line as he did, as he gave his entire effort to win that primary.
What good does it do now?
That's what he says.
Sanders is smart to avoid this. What's that saying? When your enemy is destroying themselves, you get out of the way? So what is he to say? He already knew that the deck was stacked against him. Bernie Sanders was never, absolutely never going to be the nominee for the Democratic Party. It was always going to be Hillary Clinton. The bench was weak, Martin O'Malley and Bernie Sanders. So that's why I don't get it, why they had to rig the process. For some reason, the Clintons, and I like them, they just can't play by the rules.
No.
Or do it within the establishment.
They're crooked.
She had the nomination, but I don't understand. Donna Brazile is committing career suicide.
You can't understand?
Yeah, I don't understand.
He was Richard Nixon, way ahead of George McGovern, was going to clobber him, right? Was going to be a tsunami, which eventually it was, his reelection in 72. And yet, what did they do? Watergate. Because they were concerned about the McGovern people and all the peaceniks out there who were opposed to the Vietnam War. Look at the crazy things they did, even though they had the election in the bag.
But Curtis, rather than focusing on the politics of the DNC and a major political party not having money, that's nothing new, having to start all over and raise money. But rather than concentrating on controlling the DNC, perhaps they should have spent a little more time worrying about a guy by the name of Donald Trump that was outworking them every single day, doing four or five events a
and
day.
And remember, Donna Brazile was helping Hillary by feeding her answers to the CNN debates.
I don't, that is correct. Oh, that's the allegation. I don't understand. I mean, I understand the Gore connection. This is all about Al Gore. It took Donna Brazile 20 plus years to stick it to the Clintons, but boy, did she finally return the favor right now.
Our number is 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222.
Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa. 77 WABC.
Oh, and the Democrats are coming out of the woodwork, raining threats of death and destruction on Donna Brazile by saying, why are you airing out our dirty laundry here in the DNC? That should have been something that you took to the grave. Is that something that Donna Brazile, as a loyal apparatchik, a loyal soldier of the Democratic Party, and she certainly has been for many, many decades, is that what she should have done, taking these secrets of how the election was rigged against Bernie in the Democratic primary versus Hillary to the grave? 1-800-848-WABC. Let's go to Lou, who's been patiently waiting on the lines from Queens. Welcome to Curtis and Dominic Carter here at WABC. Louie?
Hey, guys. You know, Donna Brazile's got a lot of culions. I'm glad she did what she did. And by the way, listen, remember something. This whole issue had to do with rigging the superdelegates. We are 2 years from a national election. Only one state, Maine, The Democratic Party of Maine has changed the rules as far as their superdelegates. The issue is has been dead for the last year.
Well, that's why it's going to be incumbent for Bernie, the Altacaca Sanders, to speak up, along with Elizabeth Warren and the adversaries of the Clintonistas, and also the Obamas, because Obama was firmly in the camp of the Clintons. He was opposed to Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren or anyone who might have taken the party further left. And they're going to have to challenge these powers to be. They're going to really have to end up taking them apart bit by bit if they are to change those rules.
They're going to have to practice democracy.
Yeah.
Well, good luck with that one. But also, keep in mind, this was all about stopping Vice President Biden.
Yes.
Because Biden was a serious threat. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some describe him as your crazy uncle that says things that, you know, that are off the wall and so on. But Biden had the look, the image, and you know, all of this talk about replacing Hillary on the ticket, though, it's ridiculous. Well, I don't know what Donna Brazile is thinking.
I think because, remember, and this is Team Clinton always being evasive, never being up front, could have just said, hey, she's got walking pneumonia. It's going to take a few days. It might take a few weeks to get her back on track.
No, remember, Trump was effectively describing her as
having had an aneurysm.
To serve in office.
Right. So that was misinformation. She did not have an aneurysm.
Right, right.
But by not saying anything and acting like it was
right
just a cold,
right.
A bad cold. Because remember, that's what it's just a bad cold. Well, you could say that about her husband who had severe allergy problems. You remember, he would lose his voice in the middle of a campaign. And we understood that was because of allergies. But with Hillary, she had walking pneumonia. I've had walking pneumonia. That knocks you out. That'll knock an elephant out. But instead of coming clean, then naturally, if you're Donna Brazile and others in the leadership of the DNC, God, maybe she did have an aneurysm because she never tells the truth to us and she never tells the truth to the public. They're always evasive.
Right. But remember what this is about. Donna Brazile has been waiting for more than 20 years to stick it to the Clintons. And she finally got her opportunity.
Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Joe, who's calling from Brooklyn. Welcome to WABC, Joe.
Yeah, I'm not sure whether I like to think that both of you know how internal Democrat and Republican politics work. The Clintons have been good Democrats in that they've raised money for the party. They've gotten people elected. Bernie Sanders walks in from left field and wants all the resources of the Democrat Party. And Donna Brazile's not revealing anything because Bernie Sanders signed the same agreement, didn't raise any money for the party.
Well, I got to tell you, hopefully Bernie Sanders, the Altacaca, will finally speak on this instead of taking the Code of Omerta.
Curtis Sliwa.
Boom! The search for common ground begins today.
Founder of the Guardian Angels.
I got distracted. I thought Curtis Sliwa
from
the Guardian Angels was over there.
Curtis Sliwa.
There's a guy in a red hat.
Host of The Drive at 5, Curtis Sliwa.
We the people.
He's the New York State Reform Party chairman.
New York radio talk show host. Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa is here.
He's really a New York City hero.
Yeah.
He's an American hero.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
It must be like Putin that's a begin. It must be like Putin that's a giving. It must be like Putin, it's just one way. It must be like Putin, you won't run away.
7 minutes after the hour or two, as we are high atop Madison Square Garden in the great facilities provided to us for this broadcast by NJDiet.com. That song about Vladimir Putin is number one in Moscow with two bullets to the back of your head. It's the top 40 song, and if you don't get up and dance and do the boogaloo to it, you could end up becoming a cadaver in formaldehyde. Either that, or you're shuttered off to the Siberian gulags.
Or you accidentally fly out of a window.
Yeah, accidentally fly out of a window, or you're eating sushi and then all of a sudden you're chemically incinerated, as happens to many of Vladimir Putin's adversaries. But before we talk about the Russian connection and how deep the Trump administration is sinking into that quicksand, everybody has a chance to win some moolah shmoolah here. Not rubles. You won't have to transfer them from rubles or euros to dollars. But you get a chance to win $1,000 a day and it happens four times a day this week right here on WABC. You listen for the keywords at 9:05 during Bernie and Sid show, and then once again 12:05 right here during this show, 3:05 during Michael Savage's show, and then 6:05 during Mark Levin's show. You text the keyword to 62582, and you can win $1,000. It's the new 4K a day contest. It's on. Just listen, text, and win. It's four times a day. If you need further details, just go online to WABCRadio.com. That's WABCRadio.com. So after last week's announcement that Mueller, the special prosecutor, and his team indicted Manafort and his business associate and coffee boy, as he was called by Trumpers and Trumpets, Papadopoulos, apparently now he's getting ready to indict on various charges former Lieutenant General Michael Flynn and his son, and possibly in the offing Kushner, the son-in-law of Donald Trump, for money laundering. So those are biggies coming down the pipe. Huge indictments.
But have you noticed the coincidence? And I hope you pick up on the sarcasm here. Everybody, many major players around the president, are somehow directly, indirectly connected with Russia. And if we are to believe the president of the United States, there's no collusion, there's no connection to him.
You know, it's amazing, a guy who few, if any, people know, he's the Commerce Secretary chosen by Donald Trump himself, Wilbur L. Ross, Jr., used to be married, remember, to Betsy McCoy.
Remember it well. I remember the marriage, the press coverage, and the divorce.
Betsy McCoy Ross, the former lieutenant governor for George Pataki, who stood during his inauguration, remember, wouldn't sit down.
Remember it well, in the chamber in Albany. Yes.
Right, and everybody was wondering, hey, lady, sit down. You're not the governor. Pataki is. But anyway, that's for a different discussion. But Wilbur has emerged as the Elmer Fudd of the Trump administration, because he looks like Elmer Fudd or Mr. Magoo. Choose your poison, Elmer Fudd or Mr. Magoo. Now, he has business dealings with Vladimir Putin's family members. This is our commerce secretary. Jeff Sessions, the attorney general, is being called back up to the Hill again for further questioning by not just Democrats, who obviously have it in for him, but his fellow Republicans who don't believe him when he testifies about his connections with Russians. So they want to bring him back up to the Hill again for more cross-examination. And yet here is our president continuing to insist no collusion, no involvement with Russian agents. Nobody on his side of the ledger. Hillary's side, yes, but his side of the ledger, no. And yet, every day, it's more and more. As an example, we know that Facebook and Twitter were in the back pockets of the Russians. We now find out that through their oligarch, Russian billionaire investor Yuri Milner, who is the best friends of Vladimir Putin, he invested millions of rubles in Facebook and Twitter. Now, remember, last week they were claiming, oh, we didn't know that they were buying ads on Facebook and Twitter because everything is done analytically. You know, it's done so fast because advertising changes from moment to moment.
Right, right.
But you didn't know
right.
that this Russian oligarch was pouring in millions of rubles as an investment in Facebook and Twitter. And as a, quote, a piece of ownership that he is entitled to. He wouldn't ask for favors or special considerations in terms of what some of his other colleagues were hoping to get from Facebook, Twitter, or Google.
But I'll do you one better. All of these dominoes apparently are falling around the president. All of them, many of them. Somebody's going to flip for the feds. That's the bigger problem.
You believe so?
I bet my life on it.
Wow.
If you've got Flynn... First of all, let's remember, the president's son-in-law is probably, Jared Kushner probably doesn't know what to do because it's deja vu all over again. Remember, Chris Christie is the U.S. attorney in New Jersey, locked up his father. And so now you grow up, you finally pay back Christie's persona non grata in the administration, and now you're looking at federal charges possibly yourself.
And then we look to the Clintonistas, who always claim that they were the victims of Russian hackers and Russian targeting. And I remember that Clinton press release in response to the Russian spying ring in 2010 that was a blatant lie. Her office wrote there was no reason to think the secretary was a target of this spy ring. In fact, Clinton and her family were a key target. So the lies on both sides continue. Dominic, if I had my druthers, Mueller will continue to do what he's doing on his side of the ledger and pursuing any links that Trumpers or Trumpets had to the Russians during the campaign. And there needs to be a special prosecutor for the Clintons and for their dealings with the Russians, both in terms of them purchasing that dossier, which clearly the Russians were partly responsible for, and the collusion that took place over the purchasing of the uranium on Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton's watch, in which then all of a sudden a very generous donation was made to the Clinton Foundation, and Bill was asked to give a speech in Russia for $500,000, in which he was paid to do it by a Russian oligarch again, the best Gumbarichich of Vladimir Putin. What's fair is fair.
Well, I hear you, but let's keep in mind Hillary Clinton is not in office. I hear you in terms of if it happened on each side, then investigate each side. Here's the one variable we can count on. The independent counsel, to your point, will continue going. The X factor is, does the president wake up one day and just fire him? That would be, the president has no one to blame but himself for being in this situation. For firing FBI Director Comey. He couldn't control him. And frankly, often, the president is interviewing candidates for U.S. attorneys. It is unheard of. That is violating every ethic. There's a reason why you have an attorney general.
Well, the president said last week he can't understand why he can't be more heavily involved with what the FBI does and the Department
of
Justice.
Can you imagine that?
Well, that's what got Richard Nixon in trouble. He turned the CIA on to the FBI. He said, mind your own business. This is a CIA matter. When, in fact, it was Watergate. It was the botched burglary and other nefarious acts. So the fact is, you can't have the kind of control you want of the Department of Justice or of the FBI, Mr. President. Don't you understand that? Even before you had a shot at becoming president, I'm sure people told you, you know, that's hands off Department of Justice. That's hands off the FBI. It's like dealing with internal affairs in the police department, right? It's a hands off agency.
Not only that, let's just look back in history for rewind a little bit. The president has basically acknowledged that he called former U.S. attorney when he was a U.S. attorney, Preet Bharara, directly.
Yes.
And was enraged that Bharara did not take the telephone call and instead notified his bosses at the Department of Justice. So now, is it unreasonable to assume that the president was calling to see if you would play ball when you could be a lead prosecutor with Trump offices right here on Fifth Avenue?
See, Trump was calling. He should have just did what the former President Bill Clinton did on that tarmac in Phoenix and just enter the jet of the Attorney General, Loretta Lynch, and have a discussion about grandchildren and golf. And
right, grandkids.
Not
right.
The election itself.
Right, grandkids. Right,
yeah.
Right, right.
1-800-848-WABC. Let's go to Bobby calling from New York. Welcome to Curtis and Dominic Carter here at WABC. Bobby.
Hey, Curtis and Dom. Listen, it's me, Bob, again. But can we have a little conversation and don't just hang up on me? I got a couple of things to say. First thing I want to say, I'm a huge fan of General Patton, okay? And he had the Russian communists, that whole thing, he had it pegged. I read Bill O'Reilly's book, Killing Patton. That book explains everything. Now, let me say something. Trump became the president about almost a year ago. He's 10 months into his presidency. You have to understand, Trump just jumped into this thing. But the Russian thing has been going on in the 1930s with FDR. And when General Patton saw the danger that FDR was putting us in with these communists, General Patton, all of a sudden, in my opinion, was murdered. Okay,
but wait, Bob, wait. I have to stop you
murdered
at this point. Wait. No.
Can we hear a little bit more?
But
I'm fascinated by this.
But he said that that this Russia's thing's been going on. So then what was that meeting that the president had with all the key players, including the president's
Donald
son.
Donald Trump Jr., Manafort.
Dominic, wait, can I say something?
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, Bob.
You have to understand something. Like I said, the whole Russian thing's been going on since the 30s with FDR. I'm telling you.
Well,
Trump was always a businessman. He was a real estate guy. Now, all of a sudden, he becomes the president. Trump is a very American guy. He's a patriot, okay? But he's involved now into a new realm, which he doesn't really know anything about.
Bob, if you want to use a point of history, the United States had relationships with the old Soviet Union after Lenin sacked the democracy that was forming there and turned it into a communist country. And you know who that go-between person was, Dominic Carter? Armand Hammer, guy from the Bronx, who is best known as the guy on the Arm & Hammer box, you know, the one that people put in their refrigerator to take the stink out of the refrigerator or you brush your teeth with.
Is it true you can also use that as deodorant?
Yeah, you can. Yeah, it's better than Botox, much better than Botox, much safer. But the point was, Armand Hammer acted as if he was the best friends of Joe Stalin and then would come back and give information to the Roosevelt administration. So he played both ends. And he ended up being involved in Occidental Petroleum, which then was owned by Al Gore's father. So you see how deep the connections are. And there's always been that kind of collusion between Russia, the old Soviet Union, the United States, but it was always back-channeled through somebody, through some kind of emissary. Now it's blatant. It's right in your face. It's Manafort. It's General Flynn. It's Sessions, who can't seem to remember the biggest, fattest Russian ambassador of all time, Sergei Kislyak, that he met with him on three occasions. He can't seem to remember. Now, I would suggest that's either dementia or the first signs of Alzheimer's, or maybe it's time to resign. How could you forget this guy?
But you left out the third option, lying. What about that option?
Would a Southern gentleman lie? Yes. 1-800-848-WABC. Pain. It's four letters that can stop you in your tracks. Four letters that can change your life. I've had to live with it most of my life, and it just wears you out. P-A-I-N, pain. But there are four words that can return you to a pain-free lifestyle. And it's Pain Physicians New York. Get a pad and pen. You want to write the information down, because I've gone to Pain Physicians New York to deal with a pinched nerve right in my neck and arthritis there. And Dr. Tamer Elbaz got right down and started to try to figure out what was the source of the pain. And at Pain Physicians New York, they're advanced pain care specialists. So they're going to provide a full range of services from muscles to shoulders to head and neck to hips and lower back pain. The doctors at Pain Physicians New York take a comprehensive approach to pain care. And they dare to care. They take a personal interest in your pain. Each patient receives an individualized plan, utilizing the most effective treatment and most innovative technology to reduce pain and return you to a healthy life. Call 212-757-0222 to reserve your appointment today at Pain Physicians New York. That's 212-757-0222. Or visit ppnyc.com. That's ppnyc.com. Pain Physicians New York. Hope to see you there in the waiting room real soon. They're committed to making your life pain-free.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Lewa, 77 WABC.
To the phones we go. Dominic Carter in the house. It's Peter in Brooklyn. Welcome to WABC, Pete.
Well, thank you very much for taking my call, Curtis. You guys always have a great show. I love your show. And obviously your insight. And, hey, congratulations also on the documentary. You deserve that feather in your hat. You know, one right next to the others.
Thank you, Peter.
Hey, so you're very welcome. So I wanted to just point out something, and I know that your show is good only because, in my opinion, you sort of take a cross section of people's opinions and what people think, and you know, political conditions, as we know. You know, but one thing that's interesting to me is this, you know, just from the basic standpoint of, you know, common sense, and I think a lot of us Trump supporters out here see it, and it seems almost invisible to everyone else. You know, Mueller happened to be the head of the FBI when almost every one of the allegations that he made against Manafort was taking place. None of that happened under Trump's executive branch. Mueller was always involved. The Comey, we know, exonerated Hillary before that he even investigated her. We know that she's involved with the Russians. She took $145 million, for God's sakes. What more do we need to see that the collusion occurred on the other side? And how are we ever going to get to the bottom of it when all we're doing is spending our time chasing down theories? And still, there's no evidence against Trump. Only
So, Peter, wait. Based on your argument, I listened patiently to what you just said. I wanted to make sure I heard this right. So, based on your argument, you said that Manafort and his shenanigans occurred when Mueller was the FBI director, correct?
Correct. And also...
Okay, wait. I have a question for you. Okay, but wait. I have a question for you. So then, based on your argument... Why in the world would Trump bring him in and make him chairman of his campaign going into the convention? Based on your argument.
I agree. You never know what a person this explains about their previous, you know, dilemmas or whatever they have involved themselves in. You never know. Maybe it's possible Trump really didn't know. I mean, clearly
we're letting you have your say. So it's just a coincidence that all these people around Trump somehow are involved with Russia.
Well, that's why, Dominic, because it's very partisan. There should be two special investigators, prosecutors. One prosecuting the Clintons and the Obama administration for Russian collusion on their end. And naturally, Mueller's investigation against Trump. I think Americans would feel a lot better about that everyone was being treated equally here, than just Trump being targeted. Because that's the way it looks, even though every other day we hear more and more about the Clinton, the DNC involvement with the Russians.
But Curtis, how can we say Trump is being targeted when all the people that he put
around him? We remember, we always hear the excuse, but he's not a politician. He doesn't know the ways of Washington. Oofa. That's so played out. By the way, the caller was kind enough to mention the documentary Vigilante about the Guardian Angels and yours truly. It debuted at the Denver Film Festival over the weekend. Packed house all three nights. Great test group to look at this because they're from the heartland. They know something about the Guardian Angels, but not as much as people here in the tri-state area. But there's good news. The following week, on November 12th, a Sunday night, and then that Wednesday, it will show at the New York Doc Film Festival, which is the largest documentary film festival right here in New York City. We'll post it up on our website, the Facebook page, the Curtis Sliwa Facebook page. And if you want to come out and join me and the Guardian Angels and my girlfriend Nancy Regula and see it, definitely plan on next Sunday night. November 12th, except I don't want any New York Met fans there, Ken Duffy. Spare me.
I can't go.
Go on Wednesday. What? Go on Wednesday. Met fans on Wednesday, Yankee fans on Sunday night. No, you're all welcome to come, and we'll post the information. But right now, let's get the news headlines and updates from Ken Duffy.
Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
77 WABC.
Oh, that's the edited edition of CeeLo. Come on, you guys. Why are you so frightened? Because he drops the F-bomb. Although I remember playing CeeLo with the brothers there. That's three dice instead of two dice. And then just like shooting it up against the curb, looking for 5-0 when you've seen the cops.
Stop.
Yeah.
You are so out of your mind. You're telling me that Curtis Sliwa, there's no other way to say this, the white boy, played CeeLo with dice with the brothers?
Yeah, three dice, 4, 5, or 6. Hey, you know, take your chance to win. And again, you look for the cops because then you can scream 5-0, 5-0, scoop up the money and run.
But wait, so how did this, like, look? Were you the only white guy? And did they look at you like you were crazy?
No, they looked at me, being a white guy, that I had the money. So they were more than happy to entice me into shooting craps, in this case, CeeLo, with three dice instead of two, and then thinking that they could vacuum out my pockets, which sometimes they did, and sometimes they didn't. But you always had to watch your back. You always had to watch your back. But anyway, talking about watching your back, you must have seen the photo by now. It's gone viral. The presidential motorcade was taking Donald Trump from the White House a weekend ago to one of his golf courses in the state of Virginia. And as the motorcade was winding down a wooded road, a woman on a bicycle pedaled by and gave the middle finger to the president.
F*** you.
Right. She had her bicycle hat on, and she was on her bicycle, and she was riding parallel, and then the motorcade sped past her. The picture was snapped by a White House photographer traveling with the president as they had left that golf course in Sterling, Virginia. And news outlets picked it up. Late-night talk show hosts told jokes about the encounter, and the woman's name is Julie Brisman. Her employer, a government contractor. They weren't happy about the photo. They fired her over it. Brisman, a 50-year-old mother of two, said she was stunned that someone had taken a picture of her giving Trump the middle finger. Brisman decided to tell her HR department what was happening when she went to work that Monday after flipping the bird to the president on Saturday. By Tuesday, her bosses called her into a meeting and said she had violated the company's social media policy by using the photo as her profile picture on Twitter and Facebook. They said, "We're separating from you, Brisman. You cannot have lewd or obscene things in your social media. So we are interpreting you flipping off the president as being an obscene gesture. So you're fired." So the question I ask is, should this woman, who was a good employee, according to all, a mother of two, who was riding on her bike, saw the president passing by in his entourage, obviously not a Trump fan, not a Trump supporter, flipped him the bird on her bicycle, and then the motorcade just sped by her. Nobody would have known about that if a White House photographer had not taken a picture. And he wasn't intending to do her harm, but he was just snapping pictures along the road.
Right.
That picture happened to go viral. It cost her her job. Ladies and gentlemen, should she have lost her job for flipping the bird to the president of the United States as his motorcade was passing by? 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222.
You don't think, Mr. Sliwa, she should have thought about losing her job before she flipped the bird to the president? Having seen a number of motorcades, I'm surprised that her bike was able to get as close. Because normally when the president travels, no matter who the president is, as you know, they shut it down. And I don't know what this woman was thinking, because they normally have, they call it the beast that the president travels in. It's normally two or three of them, so you don't know which one the president is in.
Right.
If you look carefully, you can see. But there's also behind the beast, behind the three big limousines, there's a elite SWAT team with a back, and they all have semi-automatic weapons. And I'm not implying that they should have responded, but I'm surprised that some security personnel, normally a local motorcycle police unit, didn't pull her over for getting that close.
No, you're absolutely correct. But she did flip him the bird.
Which she should not have done.
All right, but I think it would have been incumbent upon the company, since she was a good employee, to say, "Hey, look, that was a bad move. Erase all that material from your social networking."
Oh, really?
make sure it doesn't happen
really?
Again.
Curtis, you've been around the street around the block a long time. You think it's that simple? Here's the key word. You already said that the company she works for is a government contractor. In other words, read between the lines, the message came from the White House. It's either going to be you or it's going to be her. So either you can her or you're going to lose your government contract.
This White House is so petty.
I think any White House would do that.
Oh, I disagree with you. I really
over do. Flipping the bird that close on a bicycle to the president of the United States?
She was no threat to the president. And he was in his SUV, protected, and he was speeding by at that time. It's not like she walked up into his face and then flipped him the bird as he was standing there at the golf course, let's say, waiting to tee off.
But what about the respect? Let's take Trump out of it. What about the respect of the office? You're bold enough to just flip the bird to the president of the United States?
Oh, you have a right to. In this country, yes, you have a right to do that. Look, they let you flip the bird to cops, and cops aren't able to do anything, right?
This is true.
Why should the president be any different? You have the right of freedom of expression as long as you're not threatening the person at that time. You're not right in their face, which this woman was not. And again, she's a mother with two children.
Right, but shouldn't she have thought about her kids and the possibility she could lose her job before she flipped the president of the United States the bird?
Look, you know how angry people get. They were that way when Obama was president. Many of these Trumpers and Trumpets might have done the same in anger. And I'm sure this woman is just angry at Trump. Given a second thought, maybe she would have reconsidered and said, boy, that was a bad move. But we don't know because she got sacked right away. Let's go to Kathy calling from New York. Welcome to Curtis and Dominic Carter here on WABC. Kath?
Hi. I absolutely think she should have gotten fired. And first of all, it's all about respect. I don't care who the president is. I don't care who you voted for. You respect the president. And you have two children. I keep saying the children are watching. The children are watching. All of this stuff, disrespecting the president, disrespecting this one, that one, your children are watching.
Yeah, well, Kathy, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. This president seems to have no barriers himself for going after people, including Gold Star families.
I know it's a double standard. I'm just he is the president of the United States.
How about he start acting like the president instead of like a little juvenile?
It doesn't matter. He is the president of the United States.
We have a right to express ourselves. That's one of the great things about this country.
We do, but Kathy's right. Kathy is right.
Of course.
Lose your job over that?
Curtis, the president of the United States, and you're on a bike. First of all, who has the nerve with a motorcade of 30, 40 vehicles speeding by to flip the bird? Who in their right mind would do something like that?
When Richard Nixon was president, people threw stuff at his motorcade. Are you kidding? I remember, because I was throwing stuff at his motorcade in Washington, D.C. when he got inaugurated the second time when he beat George McGovern. Anyway, let's go to Nina, who's calling from Washington Heights. Welcome to Curtis and Dominic Carter here at WABC. Nina?
Hi. You know something? Mr. Carter, as always, throw something in there that no one has ever discussed. The fact that this person got that close to the President of the United States, I hadn't even thought about that. And that's scary.
It is scary, Nina. It really is. Because it's a security breach. Okay, back in 1988, I got to be around the Secret Service every day covering Jesse Jackson. And the way they normally do it is they have vehicles that are on the side. You can't even get that close. So I don't understand how this bike was able to get about 4 yards away from the president of the United States.
I know that Jesse Jackson was not the president. He was running in the Democratic primary.
But it was still the Secret Service.
Dukakis and Gore.
Right.
You know how many people flipped the bird to Jesse Jackson as he was driving by?
Yes, but I'm talking about, now this was 1988, right? they had, I can talk about it now that it's 30 years later, they had bulletproof shirts for him,
right.
The Secret Service.
Right.
They had bulletproof raincoats for him to wear. They were prepared for some nut to take a shot.
They were afraid that he would be assassinated.
As one of the first blacks that would be assassinated. So security, these guys are good, the United States Secret Service.
Let's go to Tom in New York. Welcome to Curtis and Dominic Carter here at WABC. Tommy?
Hi. How do you know that she just wasn't flipping the bird because she felt like she was getting pushed off the road?
That's a possibility. I mean, we're looking at the picture now.
It doesn't look like she's being pushed off the road. And here's why she lost her job. She posted it on her Facebook as well as made it the title picture?
Yeah, her screenshot.
Her screenshot. So in other words, she was proud of it until she lost her job.
Well, then she should deserve to lose her job.
I don't understand. She's a mother with two children. She should have been given an opportunity to amend all that, take it off of social networking, and promise not to do it again.
But, Curtis, you know what time it is. The Trump White House, in all likelihood, called this contractor and
said, that is so petty.
And said, "Come, it's common politics in 2017.
That is so petty.
Either she goes or you're losing every dime of every contract that you have. And if I'm the contractor, guess what? Sorry, honey, you got to go."
That's despicable. Whether it's Obama, Bush 41, Bush 43, Clinton.
You don't think the Obama administration played dirty?
Oh, of course they did.
They played very.
Listen.
One of the biggest tricks in American politics is Obama came off as the nice, smiling, non-threatening black guy.
Mr. Rogers.
Right. Look at Menendez on trial in New Jersey right now. He's on trial. Menendez will tell you he's on trial because he went against Obama.
That's a lie. He's a pig. He's a Hazari. That's why he's on trial. The most corrupt elected official from the most corrupt Democratic machine in New Jersey, Hudson County. 1-800-848-WABC.